to dog fingers.
Listen up. It's the return of The Skewer.
There's been a lot of scrambling behind the scenes.
Multiple award-winning comedy on BBC Radio 4.
The US Secretary of State is urging anyone who owns a zombie to hand it in.
The biggest stories as heard inside the head of John Holmes.
There is also a set of ghosts
arriving and the atmosphere is electric.
Remixed, regurgitated and spat back out.
If you deep fry pretty much anything, it's going to taste good.
The Skewer returns to Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
What does this mean?
Don't fall off.
Oh dear.
On Wednesday night at 11:15.
We present The Unbelievable Truth, the panel game built on truth and lies. In the chair, please welcome David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Now, if I could have picked the perfect four comedians to join me tonight, I would have been delighted, but what's done is done. So, please welcome Miles Jupp, Holly Walsh, Marcus Brigstock and Lou Sanders. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponents should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Miles Jupp. Miles recently appeared in Ridley Scott's Napoleon. He played Holy Roman Emperor Francis II, Grand Duke of Tuscany and King of Hungary. A nice chance for Miles to play someone slightly less posh than his usual roles. Miles, your subject is fungi. Any of a group of spore-producing organisms feeding on organic matter, including moulds, yeast, mushrooms and toadstools. Off you go, Miles. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
If you are looking for advice on successful mushroom collecting, the best advice is to wear a sensible hat, make sure your trousers are secured by a stout pair of braces, avoid wearing aftershave, and then get a woman to do it.
It probably is better to get a woman to do most things.
Are you buzzing?
Are you asking?
I am asking. I am asking, are you buzzing?
Yeah, I'm buzzing.
You're buzzing. Well, yeah. Why don't you buzz?
Well...
Lou!
It's probably better to get a woman to do it.
It is!
Yeah!
Well done. According to a 2010 Mexican study entitled Sex Differences in Mushroom Gathering, women are more efficient than men at gathering mushrooms.
Apparently, when he was informed of the death of the late Queen, King Charles was gathering mushrooms. But when you've been sat around doing nothing for 73 years, it's hardly surprising if a few spores take root.
Look.
I hate to buzz in so early again, but I do think he was probably gathering mushrooms when he got the news.
As it turns out, he was gathering mushrooms. It's interesting that you thought he was probably gathering mushrooms.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite unlikely.
Well, but... I sort of know him a bit better than you.
Yeah. Demonstrably. Yes, you're absolutely right. According to a recently published biography, Charles was collecting mushrooms at his Burke Hall estate near Balmoral when he received the news that he had become king.
My favourite mushrooms are the real ones they have in Super Mario, which appear to make you grow bigger, although you'll be lucky to find an Italian plumber with that kind of can-do attitude. Speaking of Mario, that character was originally known in Japan by the name Nonti Kadaranai, which translates as Mr. Bouncy Bouncy, the fungus fetishist, which is also my profile name on Tinder. While in Hungary, mushrooms sprouting from the earth are known as Tometse Pinitse, or nature's penis, which to me is something that really does trip off the tongue.
Lou.
Nature's penis. I'm just calling you by your code name. I think that's true.
That in Hungary, they're known as nature's penis?
Yeah.
They're not.
Ah.
No.
Shame.
I believe that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't need to because it's not true, but I do.
You did, yeah. Yeah. Does everyone here believe it's true?
Yeah. Yeah. If we give in to this Trumpian system, this game and some other stuff is ruined.
No, well, you can't have the point yet, but if Trump wins the next election, you can get it retrospectively.
Yeah, because David would be in a good mood. He'll just be throwing points around.
Miles.
Donald Trump has a mushroom named after him, so next time you're making a bolognese, why not spice things up by throwing in some shit arsehole mushrooms? No. I love fungi with unusual names. Some of my favourites, all of which absolutely exist, include Cliff's codpiece, Death's bikini, Tara Fitzgerald's former accountant, and Gary.
Lou.
One of those has got to exist.
Any thoughts on which?
Death's bikini.
You think Death's bikini is a real mushroom?
No, Cliff's codpiece.
You think, OK, Cliff's codpiece. You're going for Cliff's codpiece as a real mushroom. It isn't. You lose a point.
What about Death's bikini?
Do you want to
venture
another buzz?
Risk
double or quit?
Yeah, double or quit.
It's not a mushroom. Do you want to have a go on Tara Fitzgerald's former accountant?
Everybody else has. I don't know who he is, but yeah.
Is there one called Shit Arsehole?
Are you buzzing?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
No.
There's what are the girlies like, eh, Holly?
By the way, I can recommend a number of fungus-based holidays. Vienna is the birthplace of athlete's foot, Madrid is the city with the most mould in Europe, and you might want to consider a trip to New Zealand simply because kiwis stink of mushrooms.
Marcus.
Did you say Vienna is the birthplace of athlete's foot?
Yes, he did.
Yes, I think that's true.
It is not.
Kiwi smell of mushrooms.
You're absolutely right, they do.
Whoa! Wow.
So by kiwis, we don't mean New Zealanders, but New Zealand's native bird, the kiwi.
That was tricky.
They have a strong body odour which smells like mushrooms. They are not the only smelly birds in New Zealand. Flightless kakapo parrots have an odour said to resemble a musty violin case.
Do you think the smelly parrot was given the name kakapo because it smells so bad?
Yes. Miles.
Kim Jong-un is allergic to mushrooms and he once sent 2 tons of them to the president of South Korea as a gift, with a note saying you can stick these where the sun doesn't shine, or perhaps in some kind of ragu.
Thank you, Miles. And at the end of that round, Miles, you've managed to smuggle 2 truths past the rest of the panel, which are that the mushrooms in Super Mario, which appear to make you grow bigger, are real. The design of the mushrooms featured in Nintendo's Super Mario Brothers, which make characters grow in size, is based on red Amanita muscaria mushrooms, known for their psychoactive effects when consumed, which can distort scale, making objects look smaller and the subject feel larger in a phenomenon called micropsia, or Alice in Wonderland syndrome. And the second truth is that Kim Jong-un once sent 2 tons of mushrooms to the president of South Korea as a gift. And it was 2 tons of speciality pine mushrooms. Pine mushrooms are highly prized in North Korea and are even used as a form of currency. And that means, Miles, you've scored 2 points. King Charles found out his mother had died and he had become king while out foraging for mushrooms. Annoying as it meant he had a whole bag of poisonous toadstools he no longer needed. OK, we turn now to Holly Walsh. Holly, your subject is the Beckhams. That's former footballer David Beckham, his wife, the former Spice Girl Victoria, and their 4 children. Off you go, Holly.
As we all know, the Beckhams are the first family of the UK literary scene. Between them, they have written 17 books and read 4. In fact, Victoria and David, or to use their initials, VD, are famous for naming their children after their favourite writers, lyricists and pieces of literature. For example, Brooklyn got his name because he was conceived during a performance of Stephen Sondheim's musical Tuesdays in Brooklyn. Harper was named after To Kill a Mockingbird's Harper Lee, but that's because David thought she was Bruce Lee's wife. Romeo was named in honour of the couple's favourite poet, So Solid Crew rapper Romeo Dunn. And Cruz got his name from the side of Victoria's favourite missile.
Marcus.
I think maybe Harper was named after Harper Lee.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Well done.
There is nothing VD enjoy more than to curl up together on their golden cuddle throne so they can knock off the FT cryptic crossword in under 15 minutes. So on that theme, various anagrams of David and Victoria Beckham include, and good luck working these out, Bravo, victim and a dickhead, Vodka-manded caviar bitch, and bike caveman dick, hard avoid.
Miles.
So the middle anagram, I can no longer remember it.
The middle one was Vodka Man did caviar, bitch.
I love it when you say that.
Yeah.
No, that's not anagram of their name.
Every time you say VD, I think of venereal disease. That's all I can think of when you say VD.
Do you mean venereal disease?
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Well,
I think that's very much the point.
Oh, is it?
Yes,
I think a joke has always gone well when someone's had to explain it in the middle.
As someone whose name begins with D, who's married to someone whose name begins with V, we choose not to express our names as VD because of venereal disease.
Why would they choose
with which
to?
We are riddled.
Yeah. Though his parents are both certified Mensa-level geniuses, it's actually Brooklyn who's the real creative force of the family. Some of the many things he has claimed to have invented include the open sandwich, the closed sandwich, the double barrel surname, the dance moves to Saturday Night by Wigfield, the electric chair, and a sandwich.
Miles.
The open sandwich.
No.
OK.
He's not claimed to have invented the open sandwich.
No other explanation required.
Brooklyn had a relatively normal childhood. He grew up in a modest three-bedroom house that his parents had built in the corner of his actual massive bedroom. And just like you and me, his bedroom was adorned with murals of Cinderella and Prince Charming, only with the faces of Victoria and David Beckham.
Marcus.
Yep. What? Murals with their faces on.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
I'm sure he'll be fine when he grows up.
Brooklyn had two imaginary friends, a bear called Bongo and an adult woman called Jerry Halliwell. But to really get to the heart of what defines such an important literary family, the best option is, of course, to use their own words. When asked about Victoria, David described her as, and I quote, the best mum, the best wife, and the fourth best Spice Girl. Well, Victoria, when asked about her favourite thing about David, turned, as always, to her favourite poetry form, the 12-syllable Japanese shoto, and composed this very moving line. His willy is huge, like a tractor exhaust pipe. It's enough to bring a tear to your eye.
Thank you, Holly. And at the end of that round, Holly, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel. And the first one is that Bravo, victim and a dickhead is an anagram of David and Victoria Beckham, of those three options. Other celebrity names anagrams include Axl Rose, which becomes oral sex. Justin Timberlake, which becomes I'm a jerk but listen. And Michael Bolton, which becomes I'm the local knob. The second truth is that Brooklyn Beckham, the thing he claimed to invent, was the double-barreled surname. In 2023, he was widely ridiculed online after announcing that he'd invented a new thing when he and his new wife, the billionaire's daughter, Nicola Peltz, combined their last names to Peltz Beckham to create a double-barreled surname. And the third truth is that Victoria said that David's, quote, willy is huge like a tractor exhaust pipe.
I now remember that quote, and I remember thinking, what a strange thing to compare it to. And then she went on to explain that it rumbles and emits dark black smoke.
Clogs up country roads.
Yes.
And that means, Holly, you've scored 3 points. Victoria Beckham made a hip-hop album in 2003, but it has never been released. The master tapes were placed beyond use as part of the peace process leading to the Good Friday Agreement. Next up is Lou Sanders. Lou, your subject is cushions or pillows, bags or cases made of cloth that are filled with feathers, down or other soft material and used for comfort and support when sitting or sleeping. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you. Off you go, Lou.
The largest pillow fight involved 12,000 people and took place in Frankfurt, Germany in 2007.
Marcus.
That seems plausible. I've been to Frankfurt. It's a good way to pass the time.
Oh, he'll trick you and it'll be like, oh no, it was in Wolfsburg.
You've lost your joy in this game.
Yeah, well.
But you are broadly right about what's going on here, Holly, because it's not true. It wasn't 12,000 people in Frankfurt in 2007. It was 7,681 people in Minneapolis on the 18th of May, 2018.
Oh, that's not in Germany, and it's a different number. I think that's a legitimate lie to have told.
Fine.
Yes.
Well played, Sanders.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
Thank you.
No, it's a very
I don't think it's in the spirit of the game, but whatever.
What? Do you think anagrams are? Okay, afterwards, the German authorities made it illegal for Germans to go outdoors in their pyjamas and they classed all pillows as weapons.
Holly.
Oh, have Germans classed pillows as weapons?
They have. Yeah. Oh. Under German law, pillows are classed as passive weapons, and it is illegal to bring a pillow to a demonstration. Other items deemed to be passive weapons by the German authorities include helmets and body armour. So just bedroom stuff, you know. Lou.
In the UK, the 1st of September is Take Your Pillow to Work Day. However, if you're a member of the House of Lords, that's every day of the year, you know what I mean? The 29th of May is Put a Pillow on Your Fridge Day, which leads directly to Take Your Frostbitten Ear to Casualty Day. Pillow Talk is the leading podcast for insomniacs with up to 50 million downloads every night, but it's so relaxing that often the host falls asleep before it's finished, which is a real shame because this week the episode was about a Chinese woman who, after falling six stories, survived because she landed on a cushion of human poo.
Marcus.
I think the host of Pillow Talk regularly falls asleep before the end of the podcast.
No, that's not true. There's
what
not...
was I listening to then? When it started, it was Melvin Bragg. What happened then?
Lou.
Can I just buzz in?
Oh,
did a woman fall out of a window and fall onto a cushion of poo?
She did.
Yes. Yeah.
Well done. In 2007, a woman in Nanjing, China, was hanging out the laundry on her balcony when she stretched too far, lost her balance and fell six floors down into what news reports described as an eight-inch-thick cushion of human excrement that, as luck would have it, had just been emptied from the building's septic tank by workmen.
What do you mean it was a cushion?
Well, it cushioned her fall, so
yeah,
she didn't die.
I mean, anything's a cushion if you fall on it. Like
you've just got a point. You've just got a point, Holly. Let's not be bitchy.
I mean, it cushioned.
It wasn't like
her.
An IKEA cushion.
No,
IKEA's Geploppen range.
In 2012, the Daily Mirror reported about a British man entering a celebrity hair salon called Empire Barbers. He asked to have his hair cut like Tom Cruise. The barber agreed and gave him a cushion to sit on. In India, the first luxury pillows were just linen sacks stuffed with aromatic rice. These pillows don't exist today, but the rice is still used and it's called pilau rice. In 1991, the Times newspaper announced the wedding of British horror film actor Peter Cushing and the Hollywood star Whoopi Goldberg. Saying that in the future she'd like to be known by her married name of Whoopi Cushing.
Marcus.
I think as an April Fool's prank, the Times did publish that.
No. Miles.
I think it's actually true.
No, it's not true.
Of course, she famously married Gerard Depardieu and became Whoopi Dupi Doo.
Peppy cushions had a variety of names, including fart sacks, rumpy pumpy pillows, and poo poo cushions. And I would give it 5 minutes if I were you, Bags. And while we're down that end, a tribe in Sudan used cowpats for pillows and bedding. Don't get any ideas, Travel Lodge.
Marcus.
Yes, I think bedding and pillows.
Bloody hell.
You're absolutely right. The Mundari tribe in South Sudan used the dried manure of their cows as pillows.
Oh, you'll like this bit. As I said that, I thought it's not funny at all, actually. It's just a fact. It's not okay. Even funny.
Well, let's just sit right there. Whatever Lou's about to say. You want to say, because we can do that in this game, so the next thing Lou says, you say is true.
Yeah.
Off you go, Lou.
Each sugar-coated pillow in the box of American cereal, Choco Pillows, has more sugar in it than sugar has.
I'm afraid.
Miles wants to say that.
I know he's already committed to that, yeah. And he loses a point because that's not true. Thank you, Lou. And at the end of that round, Lou, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that the 29th of May is Put a Pillow on Your Fridge Day. It's celebrated in America each year. Putting a pillow on top of your fridge is supposed to bring good luck. The roots of this tradition are not entirely clear, though some believe it derives from a superstition whereby families put pieces of cloth or linen in their larders once a year to ensure prosperity. And the second truth is that early whoopee cushions were called poo-poo cushions. And that means, Lou, that you've scored 2 points. It's now the turn of Marcus Brigstock. Your subject, Marcus, is puddings, sweet dessert dishes usually served after the main meal. Off you go, Marcus.
The oldest pudding known to historians in the UK is a jelly made back in 1906, which is still on the shelf of a branch of Happy Shopper in Frome in Somerset. Jelly was originally eaten hot and with delightful little chunks of rabbit in it. Lime jelly with rabbit is Queen Camilla's favourite pud. She's been known to eat 3 or 4 whole packets in a single sitting. King Chuck never eats jelly because of his giant fingers.
Lou.
Did jelly used to have rabbit in it?
No, I think there's probably a cat food that has bits of rabbit in jelly, but not for humans.
The royal household only eat jelly in accordance with high etiquette, unobserved and with a fork.
Holly.
I bet it is high etiquette to eat jelly with a fork.
You're bang on. Well done. According to etiquette experts, jelly should be eaten with a fork alone. That means only with a fork. No, you can eat it with other people there.
Peas pudding hot won the Epsom Derby in 2023. Peas pudding cold fell and had a blue screen erected around him and was kindly and humanely shot to death and then taken off to be turned into peas pudding jelly. Most jelly comes from rendered down horses' hooves. The original rhyme went, wibble wobble, jelly from a horse, clip clop, when it's dead, of course.
Lou.
What did you say about jelly?
I said, most jelly comes from rendered down horses' hooves.
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, it doesn't. In Europe, about 80% of the edible gelatin produced is made from pig skin, 15% from the subcutaneous layers of cattle hide, and 5% from pig, chicken and cattle bones and from fish. So hardly any from horses' hooves.
Yum.
I'm sorry to say.
Because of nut allergies, Bakewell in Derbyshire is now closed to children. Joan Bakewell remains open.
Nah.
Dinner ladies at a prep school in Derbyshire downed tabards and staged a walkout after pupils there were so disgusted by their Bakewell tarts, they put them in a trebuchet and launched them off the school roof and broke the record for longest ever pudding fling. The students at that school went on to shoot Bakewells into Leicestershire and finally successfully launched a slice of tart into space.
I think some children at a school launched a piece of cake into space.
You're right!
Wow!
In 2018, pupils at St Anselm's Preparatory School in Bakewell, Derbyshire, successfully sent a Bakewell pudding to the edge of space in what they called the Space Bakewell Pudding Mission. It's not snappy, but it's accurate. Unfortunately, their onboard technology lost contact with the Bakewell tart at 53,000 feet. It's thought the tart had travelled 20 miles into space. It was eventually found over 80 miles away in an asparagus field in Lincolnshire.
They tried to send a scoop of vanilla up after it, but they don't know whether it got there because in space no one can hear ice cream.
No!
The Daily Mail have written over 150 articles about German pudding legislation. The founder of the Mail became terrified of ice cream for fear that Germans would somehow lace it with poison disguised as butterscotch. When Welsh miners first ate pasties, one end of the meal always contained a McFlurry and a toy. Savoury slash sweet pasties and pies included the Bedfordshire clanger, the Walsall clump, Norfolk gave us the fat knacker, and of course, the Cumbrian tip.
Miles.
Oh, in Norfolk, was there a sort of pasty type thing called the fat knacker?
There was not.
No. Okay.
And of course, the Cumbrian tit, which is not dissimilar to the famous pudding you can order in Italy, the nipples of Venus.
Holly.
That exists, for sure.
What does?
Nipples of Venus.
They do exist. Yeah. Well done.
They're very big in Norfolk.
The Italians have a pudding called Capizzoli di Veneri, or the nipples of Venus. Each pudding...
The venereal nipples.
Venereal, please.
Each pudding resembles a human breast in size and shape and is made using chocolate, pureed chestnuts and brandy, each one topped with a white chocolate nipple. And that's the end of Marcus's lecture. At the end of that round, Marcus, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that the founder of the Daily Mail became terrified of ice cream for fear that Germans would somehow lace it with poison. This is Lord Northcliffe. He went mad in the last years of his life due to a streptococcal infection and became paranoid and suspicious, leading to a belief that his illness was due to the Germans lacing his ice cream with poison. Northcliffe was a man of ferocious prejudices, with Jews and Scotsmen among his favourite targets. He banned photographs of women in trousers in his papers on the grounds that, quote, masculine tendencies in women are interfering with the birth rate.
It's quite the claim that it was a streptococcus infection that drove him mad, rather than reading his own newspaper.
Yeah. And the second truth is that among the savoury and sweet pasties that do exist are the Bedfordshire clanger. It's a long suet pastry with a meat filling at one end and a pudding filling at the other, usually jam or stewed apple. The clanger was a staple food for 19th century labourers, as the sturdy clanger could survive throughout the workday. There were even reports of clangers being kicked about by horses and remaining intact. And that means, Marcus, you've scored 2 points. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with -7 points, we have Lou Sanders. In third place, with -6 points, it's Miles Jupp. In second place, with 0 points, it's Marcus Brigstock. And in first place, with an unassailable 5 points, it's this week's winner, Holly Walsh. This week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth is devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Miles Jupp, Marcus Brigstock, Holly Walsh and Lou Sanders. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash, and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
And that was the last Ian McCurran series of The Unbelievable Truth. Next Monday, Stephen Fry and Jan Ravens take on the toughest of panel show challenges, doing their best not to hesitate, deviate or repeat. A new series of Just a Minute starts at 6:30 next Monday evening here on BBC Radio 4.
Uplifting stories of courage, compassion and kindness.
There were so many people who I've known all my life. Everyone was helping.
She was going to write letters to me to cheer me up.
And then that makes you want to help more when you see it.
I'm Rachel Burden, and each week in Cafe Hope, I'll be chatting to people on a mission to transform the lives of others.
I think I always wanted to live my life with a purpose.
Hearing about their experiences,
I've been hugged countless times out there.
The new series of Cafe Hope on Radio 4